97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Hans out today. A little family thing. He'll be back with us tomorrow. Joining us now, the play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke. David Locke's conversation brought to you by the Murdoch Auto Group. David, how are you?
No hands.
I know. We'll get through it together. It'll be all right.
Well, maybe.
Okay, calm down. You don't need to be overly bummed out about it.
makes you feel a little inadequate there.
I was gonna lot all kinds of praise on number 1,000 coming up tonight. Now I don't know if I really want to. 2009 doesn't seem like that long ago, but I guess it's been a minute.
I guess. I don't know why. I mean, it does. One of the kids is off. You've gone through this too, right? When the kid's off to college, you suddenly realize what you've been doing for a while if the kid's life has mostly had you involved in it. So I think the kids are the ones that set the time, show the time. But yeah, 1,000 games feels like a lot to me. And I'm not, you know, I joked with someone today, I'm not a round number guy because I think all of Russell Westbrook's triple doubles are overrated. So I'm not usually one who's kind of into that, but I certainly during the offseason checked it. It actually started, I can't remember what it was, but March 11th, 2010, which is the day in which Rudy tested positive, was like it was actually a milestone for Boone of his total games. And I can't remember exactly what it was. And so I actually built, and then never happened. And so I actually built during, you know, I think when we were all sitting around sometime trying to figure out where everyone was on games, and bowlers hard to figure out because they get preempted every now and then. So you actually have to go back and try to figure out how many national TV games there were. And Boone didn't work every game in his opening year. So you kind of have to estimate a little bit. And so we all did it. So that's kind of, I knew that 1,000 was coming and then checked it, and there it was.
Did you work in maybe a couple of those early games, you know, those Toronto trips, filling in for Hots?
I counted the one Toronto trip I did for Hot Rod. That I think that was March 8, 2009 was the first time I ever called a game for the Jazz. And then part two of that would be I've missed three. So I missed two for my son's. He competed in the national championship for alpine ski racing twice. So I went to that, or junior national championship. And then I had the flu once. Donovan's 45-point explosion against New Orleans, his coming out party, I actually didn't call.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the flu game.
Yeah, so Klauke called that one.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing where, you know, it's funny that you went back and checked because, you know, you start to think and it seems like Hots, he called, I think it was his 3,000th game, and the Jazz made a big deal out of it, and it was awesome. And I went up afterwards to congratulate him, and he had that old scorecards that he used to have, and he took it and he threw it on top of the trash, and I grabbed it and I saved it. I still have Hots. Hot scorecard from his 3,000th game somewhere in the house.
Oh, that's cool. That's super cool.
They played New Orleans. It was a Chris Paul, Darren Williams game.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. You should send me a picture of that. That'd be super cool to see. That's wild. I'll have no scorecard version of that, I don't think, for you tonight. Not that you'd want it. I guess I could, you know, I print out a few notes. My computerized documents get printed out, so I guess that's the modern version of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, and I've gone through written. I've gone now. I do everything online and then do printouts and stuff like that. I'm always changing up how I do my stuff. But it's always kind of interesting to get kind of behind the scenes on how you do things. I mean, come on, you got to celebrate this thing a little bit. That's a monumental number, 1,000 games. All right, so Sunday out of Gaines, right up there. I mean, you know, what are the games that you really look at in this 1,000 game stretch that jump out at you?
So, first game back from the bubble, even though we weren't there, just was a super emotional night, right? We all called a sporting event a game. Kobe, final night.
Oh, yeah.
The early on in my career, there was a Sonic Jazz game that kind of resonated because I'd done the Sonics, and Ray had a pretty good game for the Sonics. I think that was when the Sonics were kind of back. Maybe that's not right. Maybe I have that reversed. I think it's actually Sonics against Jazz. So I think I have that one reversed. Sundiata Gaines, certainly. And then beating Oklahoma City in the playoffs is right up there on top. That game six at Vivint Arena would have to be on top. And then the other one, by the way, is a Sacramento King game that nobody would ever think anything of, but Hot Rod joined me in the booth.
Oh, I remember that.
And so Hot Rod called the Jazz and I called the Kings for a period of time together. That was pretty wild.
I forgot all about that game. That was cool.
And then there's all the little things like my dad doing stats for me in Golden State, my daughter doing stats for me just recently, my closest friends in the Bay Area who I grew up with, you know, calling games together, playing wiffle ball or Nerf basketball or all those, you know, we used to do Pac-10 highlight show, diving into his pool, in the summer. So all those kind of things that we used to do. And then he's worked games with me before. So I think those are the things, those personal notes are ones that you remember as much as anything. I do, you know, Kobe's last game is certainly one you remember. Then just, I would also say just the people, you know, whether it's the emergence of Gordon into a star and watching him develop, watching Donovan become a star, watching Rudy become a star, watching Quinn coach, those things have all been there. And certainly working with Jerry, who, you know, I was terrified of when it first started. So, you know, to work with Jerry was, you know, quite an honor as well. So when you run it back, I mean, it started with Jerry, and then now we have, you know, my first game, I think the starting lineup was what you would probably expect. It was Darren, C.J. Miles. The Toronto game was Darren, C.J. Miles, Ronnie Burke, Paul Millsap, and Mehmet. The first one in Denver, which is 2009, was Darren, Brewer, A.K., Boozer, and Okor. So, you know, there's three versions of the Jazz that I've been fortunate enough to call, and there's been, and then doing three halftime and postgame, I got to do the big dogs that carried us to the finals twice.
How cool was it? And I know this doesn't get counted, but I got to think that night when Hot Rod called his last game in Los Angeles and you were sitting next to him doing pre-half and post, that had to be right up there too in terms of memorable moments.
Yeah, that was. And Kobe coming over to acknowledge him is kind of this really memorable moment in that, you know, any of the interactions with Hot Rod, because that was my idol growing up. I mean, that's the one who I literally said to my dad, like, I don't want to be him. That's the guy I want to be. So, I mean, even from the very beginning when I came and started doing pre-halftime and post-game in 95, is that right? Oh, my gosh.
You're on your own on that one.
Scotty, I know. I think it's 95 was when I started doing pre-halftime and post-game for the Jazz. And so you're just working near Hot Rod. I think I was scared to talk to him, though. Like, I'm not really convinced that I, like, really talked to Hot Rod for about the first year. I think I was so in awe every time I saw him. I was like, I don't want to bother him. I'll just stay over here.
Well,
I talked to Boone. That was my way of, like, being near Hot Rod.
Well, I've got my own Hot Rod story in terms of I was doing courtside and I was doing the walk-off interview, and Hot Rod and I, we were friendly. I mean, we talked every now and then. But I'd never worked with him before. And I realize as he's about ready to throw down to me, I'm like, I bet Hotz doesn't even know my name. And sure enough, when he threw down, he had no idea what my name was. Like, Scott, Lagarde. I'm like, yeah, all right, come on. It's cool. Great. Don't worry.
I'm kind of exaggerating on the Hot Rod thing, because the fact is that we used to go to Hot Rod's every night, right? Like, he had his bar. And after a lot of games, we would go to Hot Rod, or just a lot of nights. I mean, I was 24, 25 years old. So, you know, we spent a lot of nights at Hot Rod's in that stretch. So you actually, you know, he was pretty I don't want to make it sound like he wasn't personable and he wasn't friendly. He certainly was. I was just in awe. So I probably did talk to him sometime in that first year, because we actually were out a lot at night all as a group together.
All right. So let's talk about this team and where they're at and how difficult this situation is. There's a contingency out there that would say, blow this thing up, it's a mess. There's others that say, hey, it's going to be fine, just ride it through, and this team will find a way to get back to where they were. Where are you at on that spectrum?
certainly not blow it up. I mean, you know, like, are we going to blow up the Warriors? Because what are the Warriors to lose? Like 7 of their last 10 or something like that?
Yeah.
Are we blowing them up? Like, probably should trade Klay Thompson.
Get rid of him.
Right? I mean, you know, and Draymond's been missing a bunch of games, so let's just ignore that as being a part of the storyline. Well, Rudy missed a bunch of games. You know, I do believe Denver and Laker games fall kind of into scripts. Well, first of all, one thing I think that we just cannot underestimate in this league this year is rest advantage. So I think 65% of teams with rest advantage are winning games right now, regardless of, like, favorite or not, or 65%. That's a, like, Scotty, I don't know if you've ever placed a bet before in your life on anything.
Never. No.
But if you knew that something was 65% as somebody who maybe was to place a wage on something, would that matter to you?
That would matter a great deal, yes.
Yes, so teams with a rest advantage are winning 65% of games. My theory on this, of why this is such a big number this year, because it's much higher than usual, is that the margin from the best to the, ignore maybe the three or four teams that aren't trying, so the margin from number 1 to 25 is so slim in the league that when you start changing an injury here or there or a motivation here or there or a rest here or there, you really begin to swing games in a way that has not been usual. So you take Denver coming off a 30-whatever point win, Jazz having lost four games in a row, having 2 days rest, 3 days rest, suddenly healthy. It, like, that script was there for the Jazz to take that. The next night, the script was the exact opposite. Frank Vogel's on the verge of being fired. LeBron's apologizing with a tweet. They have a rest advantage. We're on a back end of a back-to-back. And they've been humiliated in their last outing out in the 31-point loss to Denver. Like, I kind of think there's a little bit of that going on. Now, the one play they kept getting us on in the middle of the floor with LeBron setting the pick and Stanley Johnson coming around, like, that's a little unnerving because that felt a little bit to me like the next variation of how teams are going to exploit us defensively, right? Like, game 9 or 10 last year, Marcus Morris Sr. sat in the corner against the Clippers and they went 5 out and you were like, oh, that's a real problem. Like, we don't have an answer for that. And sure enough, the playoffs game, and we didn't have an answer for that. And I'm a little nervous that we just actually saw the new variation. Now, Maybe it's just LeBron's that special, but that's my little concern. There's just been enough. People know us really well. We're really well scouted. We've been analyzed by everyone. We've won more games than any team in the NBA other than Milwaukee since 2016. Like, there's just no mystery, and everyone's prepared for us, and that's really evident to me right now.
Well, and I think that's, if there's anything that's the cause for concern, I think that you just hit on it there. Is it indicative of a fatal flaw or a significant issue that has been exposed? And this team, I mean, this league is so good in this scouting. And when somebody finds something and there's a blueprint, it gets replicated in a big way. And if you don't adjust to that adjustment, then you're dead in the water. And so I guess the question is are the Jazz prepared to make sure that, or do they have the capability within this roster to adjust to that and get themselves in a spot where they can avoid with what we saw in the playoffs against the Clippers?
Because what that adjustment is the Jazz have done a really masterful job this year of keeping Rudy around the rim.
Yeah.
So the Jazz adjusted to what everyone else was doing, which was spreading the Jazz out and then pulling Rudy out of the middle. And if you look at this year, the Jazz have done a pretty marvelous job. Quinn and his staff made some changes. And so Rudy stayed around the middle. Rudy's defending as many shots from 6 feet out as ever before. He's defending more shots every game. He's having an impact. And this was, okay, well, if you're going to keep Rudy in the middle of the lane, then we're setting a pick on him at the 10-foot mark. And then when that pick is set, you then have to either switch or your other guard has to defend whoever has the ball. Now, it has to have a five who can handle, who can make that play. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, of all things, it was Stanley Johnson. And it was LeBron setting the pick so that suddenly if Jordan Clarkson switched onto LeBron, you had a problem there. So there is a uniqueness to LeBron being the second big that was doing that. But it's worth keeping an eye on to see whether that's a trend we see moving forward.
I know that you were covering the team back in the 90s when this would pop up from time to time, and I made this analogy. Like, it seemed like every summer, if you're a Jazz fan, there would always be Karl Malone, Larry H. Miller dust up, and then everybody would kiss and make up, and everything would be fine. Rudy's pretty blunt, and he's got things to say, and he'll say it. Do you ever worry about those comments ever, you know, causing issues inside a locker room?
Yes. How's
yep.
that?
All right, fair enough.
Like, I mean, you gotta be. Like, well, nothing. I mean, I was, yeah. You know, might have been right. I don't know if that's the right approach. I don't know, right? You know, I was with it, and I'm not sure this is a great answer, but I was in the when I was the Seattle Storm play-by-play announcer, and the great late Ann Donovan was the head coach, and we lost in Connecticut, and Lauren Jackson and Sue Bird were super young. We had a young team, and Ann came out and became a sailor for a few minutes and was with me and just went on this tirade. We're never winning beep until one of these women is willing to walk onto the bus and have every single person beep and hate them and beep and this. And it was great. It was epic. I'll never forget it. And the concept was you got to have someone on your roster who's willing to walk on the team bus and have everyone be mad at them because they just told the truth. And that's how you win a championship. I don't know if that's actually universally true, but that was her point of view in that moment in time. And I don't know. And in the Storm case, they did win a championship one day. And I do think Lauren Jackson, who was the center, became a little bit of that one who was willing to be like, you know what? Screw you all. Like, and so, you know, maybe you have to have it a little bit, but I'm not sure it's a great script. But, well, you know, this is, they're in a delicate dance. There have never been two young players growing up together in the league that have been able to maintain a relationship and stay together. Like Rudy and Donovan have actually done it longer than most, if you look around the league, right? Ben and Joel are done, clearly, right? Penny and Shaq didn't make it. Kobe and Shaq didn't make it. LaMarcus and Damian didn't make it. Like, this is kind of, this is, it is almost, it's why I actually think the way Oklahoma City and the way Houston and some of these teams are trying to build their teams is totally flawed. Because trying to have these two young kids, frankly, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant didn't make it.
Yep.
Right? Like that's a no-brainer, like you don't make that trade, except for maybe somebody wanted that trade. Frankly, Kevin Durant and Steph Curry had a hard time with the concept when they were together, and they didn't grow up together. Like the one that might be different is Steph and Draymond somehow, and Steph and Clay. Like, this is probably because Steph's so special. But frankly, Durant didn't, you know, they didn't do it. So if you look around the league, when two young players are rising to the top together, it doesn't hold very often, and it never has. It's not, this is not like, you know, oh, the old days, screw you in the old days, right? Like, you know, it was Kareem's team and Magic joined in, right? Like, so that worked, right? You know, so yeah. Hey, and it also, with no free agency, it works better when guys actually don't have a choice and they can't leave. So I think that you have to, you know, it's a delicate dance on every roster at every moment, at every time, when players are rising to the top together, because it's not a kumbaya trip to the top.
Go, for all you kids out there, go Google Jason Kidd, Jimmy Jackson, and Jamal Mashburn and Tony Braxton. And
right, add in Tony Braxton, the fourth player on that roster.
You'll see how that turns out real quick. That's not a new
school.
But
that was like
thing.
A dream team, right? Jason Kidd, Jimmy Jackson. I mean, you just go through the history of the league, you know, it's endless. That's the truth. It's not that different than actually anywhere else, by the way. Like, I'm guessing two rising salespeople in the same office.
Oh, yeah.
And they suddenly start divvying out accounts. I'm guessing that's not a total kumbaya either.
I mean, you should see the clashes me and Hans have all the time. It's crazy. It's ugly.
I could tell some stories about this one, do old David Locke stories about rising people wanting afternoon drive shifts, right?
Yep, I'm sure you could.
Right. Including myself.
Hey, by the way, you'll like this. So Utah State played New Mexico last week, and Jamal Mashburn's kid is on that team, and Eddie House's kid is on that team.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Who's their head coach?
It is Richard Pitino, Rick Pitino's son.
Oh, super interesting, because Mash played for Kentucky, and did he play for Rick?
He did play for Rick, and he was with him in Minnesota, and when Pitino got fired in Minnesota, he came with him out to New Mexico. And by the way, that team's a mess. Those two are really, really good. They don't have anybody else on that roster, and they're not particularly good.
Do either of those teams make the players make the league?
I don't think Eddie House's kid does. The Mashburn kid might have an opportunity. I mean, he's got some shooting ability. The funny thing is Eddie House's kid, I think it's Jalen House. He actually averages like 7 assists a game, which I'm thinking, I don't know if Eddie House had 7 assists in his entire NBA career.
No, Eddie House was, you know what Eddie House's claim to fame locally is, right?
Clarkson.
He was the perfect player comp to Jimmer Fredette.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, and people lost their mind when we made that comparison.
He was the perfect player comp to Jimmer Fredette, like 100%. You know, here's an interesting, like, socioeconomic discussion on this. I'll be curious to watch. So we have so many kids in the league. It's so hard to make the league, first of all, so hard to make the league. And we have so many kids in the league whose parents were pros. So from Donovan Mitchell's dad being a minor league baseball player to, you know, Steph and Clay, and there's just a lot, right? Like, you know, and it's also players like you've never realized, like Ed Davis's dad played in the league, right? Terry Davis. Like, there's just a ton of – now the next generation of kids, dads are going to have made so much money. I wonder whether it continues or not. Right? Like, Del Curry did okay – but he didn't make $125 million, and Steph grew up, you know, perfectly well off, but he didn't grow up like lavishly rich, like $100 million rich. And it's interesting to me to see whether the next set of kids who are growing up with $100 million are able to have the work ethic and dedication to be able to go there.
Well, and then also, too, to have that edge that you get. I mean, I was watching a documentary a few years ago about Barry Sanders, and his son was, didn't he play at Stanford? Barry Sanders' kid.
Yeah.
And Barry Sanders in this documentary said, my son has far more talent than I had at his age, but he will never be the player that I was because I refuse to be the dad that my dad was to me. And
you know, there's the variation a little bit on LeBron would be when LeBron was asked about Bronny, why doesn't play football? And his answer was because he doesn't need to.
Oh, wow.
I only played football. LeBron said, I only played football because I was trying to get out. And I didn't know what my path out was. But my son doesn't need to play football. He doesn't need to get hit in the head.
Yeah. And that's just an edge that I don't think your random, you know, person or, you know, somebody, you know, living in the suburbs here in Utah can really appreciate that statement.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's very true. I mean, some of these guys certainly have just an edge. You know, Steph is just a killer, right? Steph's just a killer. Like the quiet baby assassin is his nickname, and that it's true. Because, and so you wonder, regardless, would Steph just be Steph? But, you know, hey, it's not just athletes, right? One of my friends is the financial advisor for the richest of the rich. And he just says it's a problem. Like, having that much money is a problem for the kids growing up. And, you know, if we go back to where we started the conversation, he always says to me, I mean, reference me, he's like, if you'd had that money, you wouldn't be the Jazz play-by-play announcer. And I'm like, come on, this is always what I want to do. When I was 8, 9, 10, 12 years old, I said that's when he's like, right. But there was a moment in time where desperation hits you and you just powered through it. And if you had that kind of wealth, you just wouldn't have. You just, I'm like, yeah, okay, well, I don't need to, you know, I mean, my career starts because I'm teaching skiing at Solitude, and I finish anytime I don't get an afternoon lesson, I drive down to 106.5 in the Walker Center, take like my ski instructor money from the day, pay for parking, and go sit in the lobby of the radio station until they finally hired me. I literally just sat there every day. Like, hi, I'm here again. I'm just going to be here again tomorrow, by the way, because I just want a job. Right? And so, like, on one level, I was really fortunate that I had enough financial wherewithal that I could survive as a ski instructor while doing that. So I don't want to, you know, I've always said my life is a combination of privilege and perseverance. And I don't ever want to diminish how much the privilege mattered in this story. But there is something to that, right? Like, if I had, like, the financial wherewithal to be able to, like, survive while teaching skiing and barely have enough money and, you know, wasn't necessarily having leftover cup of ramen every single day, only most of the days. And, you know, I think had, you know, my family had $100 million, maybe I don't do that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think there's something, it's not just athletes, I think it's everyone.
Well, I mean, I think your ability to know that there's a safety net allows you to act differently than you would otherwise. And if you don't have that safety net and that this is all you got, then you got to go. And so,
yeah, that's not a safety. There's a difference between, like I would argue in my privilege, I had a safety net, but I knew I had to work every day. So I better make sure I could get the job I want. Right.
Yeah.
But we're talking $100 million. That's a little different than a safety net.
Yeah.
It's
David,
like a bouncy. That's like a bouncy house following you everywhere.
It's like, oh, I failed. All right. Well, that was fun.
Woo! I get to go down a slide. Woohoo!
Hey, by the way, and I know I got to let you go, but Lloyd, I hope you're okay with this, but Lloyd did send me a picture. He did see the van in action, and he did send me a picture of it, and it is.
He did.
It is everything that I thought it would be.
When did
impressive.
Lloyd see the van?
Lloyd, you want to pipe in on this?
I think it was like last. It was a game last week. I think is when it was.
Oh, yeah, the game. The van. Was
I think
the
you
game.
Were parked yeah. there doing actually an interview. I think you were getting ready to hop on air.
Oh, I was doing. Well, I do. I've been bringing the van down and doing the Zoom because you can't do the Zoom from inside the arena because you can't hear. Since we're not meeting coaches in person, you're doing all the Zooms. I've been doing.
In fact,
the
I think it was last Wednesday.
Yeah, and I probably was doing a Zoom in the van.
And that thing is a thing of beauty.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, it's fun.
Good for you. All right, David, appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
We can go hang out. You know, we can go chill. We can't do stuff. Like, I'll bring lunch someday, and we'll have lunch in the van.
Well, hey, we'll bring the Comrex down there. We'll do the show from the van.
We can do that. That's easy.
Yeah, I like it.
All right.
Thanks, David.
Remote. See you. Bye.
All right. David Locke, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.